Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Remote work, here to stay? Many are saying yes. Labor in conflict with the White House on OSHA's emergency temporary standard. And today on the show, the food and commercial workers out of New Jersey and Senator Sherrod Brown. Welcome to the Thursday, January 6th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. Hugh Giordano is going to be our first guest on the show. He was joining us, I want to say, four, maybe 6 months ago, and he is the Assistant Director of Organizing for the Food and Commercial Workers Local 152. Website is ufcwlocal152.org. They are based in New Jersey. They go into Pennsylvania as well as New York. We're going to talk about social equity, economic justice standards in the new emerging markets and how workers' rights are so important today. Talk about the big shift in workers quitting their jobs, many of them in low-wage jobs, including retail. And they represent a lot of retail workers. Altogether, 14,000 workers in retail stores, healthcare facilities, manufacturing, public sector. And actually, they go across four states. And I counted them. If you go to the website, I counted 85 different companies that they have representation in. Bakeries, barbers, cosmetologists, cafeteria workers, dairy cheese processors, food canneries, glass factory, one glass factory, number of hospitals and nursing homes, Jell-O and cocoa processors, janitorial services, hotel, restaurant supply, poultry plants. They even represent workers at a pool and spa company. It's amazing the reach of this local. Again, 14,000 members. One of the growth areas, cannabis. Yeah, a lot of states have legalized recreational marijuana, and they've been doing a really good job in organizing those workers. So we'll touch on that and more with Hugh Giordano as our first guest. Later in the show, Senator Sherrod Brown will be joining us. And obviously, this is an interesting date in American history. We'll reflect on what happened 1 year ago today. And we'll take a look at what happened in the past year that Senator Brown played a huge role in, delivering results for Ohioans. Number one, we had the American Rescue Plan, the Child Tax Credit. The senator led successful efforts to expand the credit, delivering the largest tax cut for working families ever, ever. Saving pensions, that was a big one for the multi-employer plans. And investing in Ohio and actually all of America with the Bipartisan Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. And one of the questions I want to ask him is, how does that money finally trickle in? Is it awarded in grants? We've had a couple of conversations, if you've been listening to the past couple of shows. That money should be coming in. It's January. It was passed a month ago, but, you know, it's still got to go through some procedures. So we'll get some answers from Senator Sherrod Brown on that, because Ohio stands to get a whole lot of money. So Senator Sherrod Brown will be joining us later in the show. 2 years into the COVID-19 pandemic, remote work appears here to stay. That's right. As infection rates have surged in recent weeks, many employers all around the country have instructed their employees to continue working remotely, putting a halt to company return to office plans. And it appears increasingly likely that working from home will remain the long-term norm, at least for certain professions, mainly high-paying professions. Obviously, the trades are not involved in this. Those frontline workers at grocery stores. No, no, you can't work from home. According to a new report by Ladders, Ladders is a job search site for positions that pay at least $100,000 per year. Over a quarter of high-paying work, that is over 20 million workers, will be fully remote by the end of this year. Employer decisions to postpone return-to-office dates have prompted tremendous criticism, especially given the collateral effects working from home that it has on child care and education. Boy, we've seen a lot of that happen when a lot of the schools had a shutdown last year. On Monday, Minnesota announced that it would adopt the Occupational Safety and Health Administration's vax or test standard, thus becoming the first state to do so. The standard effectively requires covered employees to mandate either COVID-19 vaccination or regular COVID-19 testing and mask wearing. OSHA's rule currently awaits expedited review by the U.S. Supreme Court with a special hearing. That hearing is scheduled for tomorrow, by the way. Liz Shuler is upset with the Biden administration. Liz, of course, the president of the AFL-CIO. And she announced yesterday that, and this is a quote, "We strongly disagree with Biden administration's decision to discontinue the Occupational Safety and Health Administration's emergency temporary standard for healthcare workers. With the Omicron variant surging and no permanent standard in place, our frontline heroes are in grave danger of COVID-19 infection. The emergency temporary standard made clear to healthcare employees that proven prevention measures limiting airborne exposures to the virus are absolutely necessary and would be fully enforced to keep workers from getting sick and being removed from work." Shuler goes on to say that our message to every employer is this: while vaccines and boosters help prevent serious disease and death, COVID-19 is life-threatening, especially to healthcare and medical workers, and all proven protective measures must remain in place. To protect workers now, we need to build on the emergency COVID-19 standard by making it permanent, not scrapping it altogether. Again, that's Liz Shuler from the AFL-CIO. So far, no comment from the White House on this. On another issue, Liz talked about the new year and how excited that she is for the possibilities in front of all workers. Liz said there will be challenges in the months ahead, but if there's anything we have shown, it's that labor, the labor movement, is ready to meet this moment. We need to make sure the Build Back Better Act is passed as soon as possible, and we are mobilizing to show the U.S. Senate that working people mean business. The investments in the Build Back Better Act will provide opportunities for all working people to get ahead, including those that have been sidelined by the pandemic. It will create a fair economy, which is just what we need to move America forward. Fred Redmond, who is now the Secretary-Treasurer of the AFL-CIO, will be joining us tomorrow, and we're going to get into more detail on that. Because, as you know, this was stalled last month with Joe Manchin. Joe's getting a lot of flack, especially from his base, the miners. The coal miners issued a statement. We read that on the show a couple weeks back, and if you want to go to the miners' website, umwa.org, you can read how upset they are because in the Build Back Better legislation, there's help for miners suffering from black lung. And many of them are in that category. So we'll see what happens with Joe on that one. Got another organizing win here. Workers at the Baltimore County Public Library had a special reason to celebrate this holiday season. It was announced last week that 460 full-time and part-time library workers voted 77% in favor of forming a union with the machinists. Boy, that just sounds weird, doesn't it? Machinists and library workers. But it's happening. The successful vote comes after years of organizing, which included the IAM winning a new state law allowing the employees to collectively bargain. Comment here from Anita Bass. She's a circulation assistant at the Essex branch. This is so exciting for Baltimore County public library workers. This will empower the staff of the library to continue to do the important work of fulfilling our mission and vision. We need a system in place to protect and support each other and a legally binding contract that will give us that. I believe in our mission, and I know the IAM will help us accomplish that mission. IAM Grand Lodge Representative Bridget Fitzgerald, lead organizer of the campaign, said, "I could not be more proud of these professionals for joining together and standing strong for what they deserve. This is a victory for them, their families, and all of Baltimore County, which rightfully relies on a strong and inclusive library system." All right, we have to take a break. You are listening to America's Workforce. Coming up next, United Food and Commercial Workers out of New Jersey, Local 152. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And of course, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Area Labor Federation, which is part of the AFL-CIO. Let's go to line number one, and welcome back to the show. It's been several months since we checked in with this guy. Hugh Giordano is his name, and he is Assistant Director of Organizing for the Food and Commercial Workers. I'm talking about Local 152, and I stand corrected. There's four states. I thought New York was part of that. Delaware, New Jersey, Maryland, and Pennsylvania. Hugh, did I get that right for those four states?
You got it right.
Good, good,
you
good.
You got it.
You don't need a fifth state right now, okay? Maybe down the road, right?
Yeah, maybe down the road, but not right now.
And you're still at, 14,000 members in 152?
Yes, we are at 14,000 members, and we're hoping to grow that number this year, trying to do some good bottom-up organizing and get some new members into the local and have them join the middle class.
That's what it's all about. Little background on Hugh. He became a member of 152 as a deli clerk at Brown's ShopRite. That was in Roxboro, Pennsylvania, while he finished college, going back to 2005. And while working at Brown's, he interned with both Local 1776 and 152. I recall we had 1776 on the show as well a couple months back. So let me ask you this. What got you involved in organizing? And I know, I guess some of this happened when you were a student at Philadelphia University. Refresh me and our listeners a little bit about this. Hugh, go ahead.
Sure. I was working at the dining services at Philadelphia University. I was still in high school at the time. And as I was working there, there were many issues happening affecting workers, including myself. Even though I was only in high school, I was feeling misrepresented. They were stripping away benefits from workers that have been there for a while, giving very, very mediocre raises. I'm talking about 10-cent raises for folks that were, you know, busting their butt every day, providing professionalism in the kitchen. And I decided that enough was enough. Thankfully for me, I had a great mom who was also a union member. And she said, you should contact the union. And luckily for me as well, the internet existed. I was able to Google, you know, a labor union, and I found the UFCW, and I then went and became a committee member for the organizing team at the university to organize my job, and ever since then, I've been hooked.
That's great. What union was your mom in, Hugh?
My mom was actually in UFCW Local 1776. She worked for Superfresh for almost 30 years and was part of that local. So I was always very much in tune to unionization. My grandfather was a member of Iron Workers Local 401 in Philadelphia. So union was part of my life. So when she had brought it up to me and it was kind of an easy choice to do, and yeah. I'm glad she did.
Well, the iron workers are a tough bunch. I don't know if I told you this last time, but we record the show, America's Workforce, at Iron Workers Local 17 in Cleveland, Ohio. So, yeah, good group.
Awesome group there.
We featured a lot of them. And I tell you, they're pretty excited because of this infrastructure bill. There's a whole lot of work ahead in America, no doubt about that. Getting back to 152. Did you get in organizing right away when you joined the union?
Yes. So as I was going through college, I interned with Local 1776 and Local 152. And during that whole internship, it predominantly dealt with organizing. I was directly talking to workers, getting authorization cards signed, having union meetings. As an intern. So I dived right into it. So as soon as I graduated with my undergrad, I was right out there in the streets, ready to go.
Hugh, if you don't mind, why don't you tell our listeners how difficult it was when you started that job as an organizing guy, and now you're assistant director of organizing, because there's a lot of pushback by employers on this. And I'm sure when you got your first win, maybe the champagne corks came out on that one. That had to feel pretty good. But if you can reflect back to that time, I'd love to hear about it.
Sure. Well, I think everybody, I mean, even I did as a young organizer, everybody has the perception that if workers are treated bad and we walk up, it's like hitting the lottery. But I learned really fast that it wasn't like that. You know, companies have done such a great job of speaking to their workers and putting the fear of even talking to a union rep into them, that it's more difficult than people realize. Most people, you know, unfortunately, when you go up to a warehouse or a factory, you think people will take your cards and be so excited to see you. Most of them will turn away and walk away. And you could tell it's fear. Over the years, you start to learn body language and, you know, what that means. It's not that they don't want a union. It's not that they don't need a union. But it is much more difficult than people realize. And when an employer has the right under the law to forcibly put folks into meetings and to indoctrinate them with propaganda of anti-union propaganda, you know, I only get to see them for a couple minutes when they're on their break, when they're outside, when they're leaving work. They have them for 8 to 10 hours a day. So there's a big misconception of the access that we have, and it's a lot of work. You know, you have to have thick skin because sometimes workers will act angry towards you or mean, not because they want to be, because they're fearful of their job, right? When you walk up, it's like, oh my God, I can lose my job. And even though that's illegal, and even though that's not the truth, you know, that's what a lot of workers feel. And they're at that time, you know, it took a lot of work. I built up, you know, thick skin. But I think that we have the ability to continue to fight to change those laws. And also with the new generation of workers coming up, I think that we'll be seeing a different mindset going forward.
Were you ever threatened or your family threatened when you try to organize the workers?
Oh, yeah. I've had places where I was told if I was out there handbilling, that if I'm still there, they'll run me over, you know, foul language, you know, all that type of stuff. Yeah, absolutely. It has happened. Not as much lately, thank God. But definitely in the beginning of my career, I had a lot of run-ins with some angry managers. But, you know, again, you learn how to deal with that. And as you get better at this and understand the law and how to use it properly, you can kind of nip that stuff in the bud quickly to make sure that doesn't happen.
I'm sure that was a baptism by fire. You learn real quickly. And like you said, you got to have a thick skin. I mean, to be an organizing guy, that's part of what it is. Your first win, where was your first win? Maybe you can share that moment with us.
Sure. So my first win was a group of janitors at a mall. It was my first campaign where I was by myself. And it was a group of 20 workers at a large mall in South Jersey. And, you know, it was interesting because when you do this job, you, even yourself, if you don't learn something out of it and your eyes don't open a little bit through the process, then you're not really a union organizer. And one of the things that really made me excited about that win, and it was a blowout. I remember it was 20 workers. And we got 19 yeses, and there were no votes because the other person just didn't vote. And, you know, for a first win, I was excited. But it also made me realize that, you know, when you walk through places, especially today now with the pandemic, it makes you appreciate even more folks that work in janitorial services. You know, people walk by right by these folks and don't even notice them.
Right.
But that's the reason why you have a clean food court. It's the reason why you have a clean bathroom. It's the reason why the stores are up and look good and clean, and you know, you enjoy your shopping experience. And it all comes from a person with a broom and a dustpan and a rag. And it made me appreciate them even more too.
Sure.
That they're working people and they are skilled. You know, being skilled at that job, being able to clean and sanitize appropriately, and especially in today's world, you appreciate that even more. But that was my first win, and, you know, I'm very happy about that. I still remember how I felt, and, you know, to this day, that place is still organized.
That's awesome. So that was when, and how many victories since that time, Hugh?
Oh, wow. So that was definitely, must have been like 13 years ago. I have theoretically been involved since I was 17 when I organized my job. I'm 37 now. So that might have been, about 13, 14 years ago, that win. And since then, yes, we've had multiple wins in different industries, whether it's healthcare, janitorial services, manufacturing, warehousing, transportation, retail. You know, the one thing that I always felt as an organizer is if you're working, then you deserve a union. I don't care what industry you're in. You know, I think everybody, if they show up on time, they clock in, they do what they need to do, they follow rules and procedures, then they deserve decency and respect.
Sure.
That's why we're very diligent in speaking to everybody out there. And I have always made that my mission, that from the time my job doesn't start when I go to the union hall. My job starts as soon as I leave my driveway. So if I drive around the corner and I see, you know, a service delivering food to a local restaurant, I'm stopping immediately and talking to that person. This is a 24/7. To me, you know, it's a belief, right? So,
right.
24/7 for me, it's part of my identity. I don't look at it as a job. I don't look at it as, you know, just victories to put on my resume. You know, this is activism. You know, we're a union. We're not a business. We're nonprofit organizations that are supposed to be standing up for people that need a voice, want a voice, or just don't have the courage yet to stand up for themselves. And someone needs to do that. And so over the many years, we've been hitting as many industries as possible.
Well, I noticed that on your website. I referenced that at the top of the show. I counted over 80 different facilities that you represent. Coffee, tea processors, cafeteria workers, food canneries, glass, a lot of hospitals, a lot of nursing homes. Hey, let me talk to you about the nursing homes. As you know, the nursing homes were the center of attention because of the pandemic. How's that been going for you? Obviously, and I know a lot of people have quit the profession because they were frontline workers there. But in your estimation, you know, 2 years now into the pandemic, where are we with that?
That's a great question, and there's so much in there. I mean, that could be a whole segment, you know. And you know, when we first started the pandemic, and I remember it was around March when things really started to shut down. It was around March 15th. I remember that date because I just remember how big of a deal it was. You know, in the beginning, people were, to be honest, were just whacked out, right? Because we didn't know what we're dealing with. You know, you watch the news. People were kind of a lot of question marks still of how dangerous this virus was, how quickly it was going to spread, who would affect, and how bad it would be for those people that did affect. And our first mission was to protect the worker, right? What do we need to do immediately to get things done? And that was PPE, right? Making sure that people had masks, gloves, proper equipment. And as we all know, that did not happen at the beginning. There were major issues with not just our members, but workers in the healthcare industry, period, not having proper equipment, having to reuse equipment or wash it, something that would never be acceptable during regular hours of business. So that was a major, major first step. You know, the other thing had to do with economics, right? You know, people were getting sick. There, you know, folks didn't choose to get sick. People, you know, came to work and did their job to protect society and keep society functioning and running. So we had to make sure that if people were sick or infected or exposed, that they weren't sitting home for 7 days and losing a whole week's of pay, right? That destroys somebody's month. You know, I think most working people understand that when you're sick and you miss a day, it hurts you, right? But if you're out for a week, your whole month is destroyed, right? You really have to rethink your entire month now, how you're going to spend that money, because now you're down a whole week's of pay. So we had to make sure that we could have protections for that. You know, making sure that we had heroes pay. You know, a lot of folks think that hero pay came out of the blue. It came from unions. It came from unions standing up to the plate, whether it was healthcare, you know, food manufacturing, food distribution, retail sales of food, you know, your pharmacies, all these things where you need. You know, it was the workers of the union that stood up and said, we deserve more money during working through these hard times. And then as that started to progress, other workers that worked in non-union facilities started realizing that unions were the reason why that pay came. So you had non-union facilities then giving out hero pay to compete, right? So I think that, you know, we did the best we could with what we had in front of us.
Right.
You know, whether it was talking to politicians on the state level, on the federal level, working with our employer partners. You know, luckily for us is that we have good relationships with industries that we represent. So we tried to work together because they don't, you know, we've had, you know, folks that were owners that their parents passed away through COVID. So they were major advocates in protecting the workforce and protecting their family because they realized it was bigger than just on-site protection. It was a global issue that we had to deal with. You know, and you know, luckily for us over the, you know, year or so, we've been able to deal with this appropriately. Is it perfect? No. Are people still getting sick? Yes. And with the new variant out and the exposure rates higher than ever again, you know, you just have to be persistent on this and not get lax on the basic protections of health and safety. And I think that this is a great time for unions to promote that again, because you've always heard the, you know, the anti-union propaganda of, well, unions were good during the coal mining days when kids were working and there weren't harnesses. Well, apparently today companies have a hard time just providing masks and gloves. So The issues in safety are still here. So you have an opportunity.
Yeah. Well, I got a good answer out of you. You're right. We could do a whole show on that, but I really appreciate your comments and insight on that. Hugh, I have to take a break here. Hugh Giordano joining us on our live line, and he is with the Food and Commercial Workers, Local 152. They're based in New Jersey. They cover four states, 14,000 workers, Delaware, Maryland, New Jersey, as well as Pennsylvania. Organizing cannabis workers. We'll talk about that next. Later in the show, Senator Sherrod Brown will be joining us back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, we are available on 6 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always like those 5-star ratings, so please keep them coming. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Hugh Giordano. Hugh is Assistant Director of Organizing for the Food and Commercial Workers, Local 152 out of New Jersey. 14,000 workers in retail, healthcare facilities, manufacturing, public sector. 4 states, we're talking Delaware, Maryland, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. Cannabis. I know a lot of states are passing laws for recreational marijuana. Ohio is in that category, too, and I know they want to try to expand that. What's the situation in that area? Because I know there's a lot of organizing going on, and you're right in the middle of it. So, Hugh, what's the story?
Yes. Cannabis has been a main focus for the UFCW since the late 90s, and it is a major focus even more now than ever for the UFCW. The entire, not only in the U.S., but also our Canadian chapters are organizing cannabis as well. And there's a lot going on. You're absolutely right. There's a lot of states that are moving to legalize an adult use market. also expanding their medical market, like Ohio is doing, with conversation of legalization as well. And part of those conversations with us are always about workers' rights. If you're going to create a new industry, and, you know, cannabis is based on, if you look at why legalization is happening, is based on social justice, economic justice, and social equity, right? They're talking about how the war on drugs has affected working and poor people, predominantly people of color. And if we're going to have those conversations and talking about helping communities that have been devastated and affected by not only the war on drugs, but just the economic war on working people, then we have to make sure that worker standards are part of any type of cannabis legislation. And fortunately for the UFCW, we have been very successful as of yet in working with state politicians and governors to pass labor peace requirements, just like the casinos have had in regulations, just like some of the alcohol regulations that have been passed on the state level. We thought cannabis should be treated the same way. And fortunately for us, we've been able to pass labor peace agreement requirements in New Jersey, in New York, in Connecticut. Even Virginia has labor peace in their legal market. And on top of that, we're working on other states that are looking to go into the adult use market. And we got project labor agreement language into these laws as well, so that the building trades, you know, such as the iron workers that you get to hang out with, they get to work. Carpenters, the IBEW, the steam fitters, because these places are massive, 100,000 plus square foot cultivation facilities, you know, so there's a lot of opportunity here for jobs from shovel to sale in cannabis. And I think that as anybody that's AFL-CIO affiliated, this should be a main topic for us to work together and to continue the fight.
So you worked on the legislation, as you referenced, and I heard you say four states. And the legislation specifically says what? That they won't interfere with workers trying to organize? Can you explain that part for me?
Sure. So we'll use New Jersey as a prime example, because it's been the standard for other states such as Virginia and Connecticut. They took a lot of the New Jersey law and used it as far as the labor standards. And what it does is it requires that anybody that applies for a license, whether it's cultivation, whether it's extraction, whether it's a distribution, whether it's retail sales, they must go into a labor peace agreement. And that labor peace agreement has done a lot, because it creates neutrality, right? It makes it so that the owner has to act in a neutral way, allow access to speak to the workers, and to make it a fair playing field. If in reality, what I tell folks is that if you look at the labor peace requirements in cannabis, it mirrors what the PRO Act would do on a national level for workers' rights to organize, right? Wow. It also has car check legislation in it. So that way it's, if you get a majority of the folks signed up, there you go. You got them, right? You don't have to go through a nasty election. It's able, if workers choose to sign a card, which they are adults, if someone chooses to put their signature and date on a card, then they made a choice as an adult. And who is anybody else to tell them any differently? So that law pretty much mirrors what the PRO Act would do. And in a quick plug, that's why the PRO Act is so important. Because if we can do this in cannabis, imagine what we could do with every industry nationally.
Oh, yeah. And I hope this next session of Congress here moves forward on that. I know there's a lot on the plate, and Democrats are fighting Democrats right now. But that would be definitely one that needs to pass in America and get rid of all the right to work laws across America. 27 states have right to work laws, and that would be a thing of the past, too.
I think it's great that we're able to do these things with cannabis, and then to also show examples of how this type of legislation would help workers on a national level. So it gives us more of a robust argument to support the PRO Act because of cannabis. Who would ever think that, right?
No. Hey, you know what? I'll take it. Not a problem. Let me ask you this. Because of your success in those four states, is the national UFCW trying to pick up this model and take it to various states around the country? Because obviously it's going to help with organizing, right?
Absolutely. I could say that we're very fortunate that the International Union of the UFCW is very supportive of cannabis. They have a division for cannabis so that we can be out there not only organizing but doing the politics, you know. And it's even going to council meetings. We have been very diligent of making sure that local standards are part of this process too, because the states give the local towns, cities, and boroughs a lot of power to decide who comes in and who doesn't. So the UFCW, from the local level all the way up to the national level, under the guidance of our president, Mark Perrone, you know, has been very supportive of cannabis, and we only look to do more.
I like that. Hugh, we got a couple of minutes left in the show, and I just want to pick your brain a little bit about what is happening in America. You probably heard about the Great Resignation, people quitting their jobs, many of them in low-wage jobs. And with that being said, this has got to be the right time and the right place for you as an organizer at Local 152. A lot of these folks are non-union, and they're realizing, you know what? If I had a union at my workplace, I'd be a whole lot better off. So with that being the case, how do you feel about the future, Hugh?
Honestly, I have to agree with you. I feel positive about it. I think that there's a new generation of workers that are coming up, folks in their 20s and even in their 30s in the millennial group, in the senior millennials, they've had enough, right? You know, I fall into that senior millennial group. And, you know, it's society is different today. The work models are different. The economics are different. And we can't survive off 1950 standards. It's time to step up to the plate. And I think that workers, young workers specifically who are educated, you know, there's a lot of young workers who have degrees. And because of not only just the overall saturation of the markets, but COVID and everything else happening in front of them, you know, they're working in these jobs that would be considered, you know, non-skilled work. But to us, all work is skilled work, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and people are just are not taking it, and they're educated on the rights. They're able to, you know, use technology and share information. You know, the people are finding out that, you know, I work at a facility in Pennsylvania and the other facility in Massachusetts is unionized, but they're getting, you know, better wages and benefits. Why am I doing the same job and not getting the same? So instead of quitting, people are fighting back. And that's apparent around the country. I mean, you look at, like, for example, the Amazon in Alabama. You know, people aren't just quitting and going somewhere else. Starbucks in New York, people aren't just quitting and going somewhere else. Because that's been what's happening. And I've always told workers, you can run all you want, but you're always going to run into the situation if you don't have guarantees in a contract. So why should you leave? They should just do the right thing. And I think that young people, young workers are starting to get that. And you're going to see, I think, a big influx. And hopefully this year in 2022, I hope that we see just a major wave of organizing in various industries.
All I can say to that is about time, my friend. It's about time. Hugh, I really, really enjoy having a conversation with you. It's long overdue. Let's do this again and keep up the fight. A lot of good things are happening in America. We have a pro-union president. We've got a pro-union NLRB. Right place, right time. Let's keep moving forward. Okay, brother?
Oh, 100%. Thank you so much. And thank you for doing what you do, too. You know, what you do in journalism and media is an important part of educating workers and just people in general. So thank you for what you do too. Thank you.
Much appreciated, my brother. Hugh Giordano, Assistant Director of Organizing, Food and Commercial Workers, UFCW Local 152.org. You can also check him out on Twitter, follow him there, as well as Facebook. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Senator Sherrod Brown.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Iron Workers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 iron workers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union iron workers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our iron workers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast. Well, let's go to line number two. And joining us each and every month, as he does here on America's Workforce, Senator Sherrod Brown. And today we're going to look back at 2021 and what he delivered, especially for the state of Ohio and the entire nation. Senator, welcome back to the show and Happy New Year to you.
Thanks. Good to be back. Happy New Year to you.
Let's run down. I mean, right off the bat, we had a new president. We had the American Rescue Plan. Let's talk about putting money into people's pockets. That's what it took to jumpstart the economy. And I'd like to get your take on what happened last year. Go ahead.
Yeah, we forget what the country was like a year ago. We forget. Well, there was the riot in the Capitol, the insurrection today a year ago. We forget the economy was really floundering. People were laid off in huge numbers. People were losing, a lot of union workers were about to lose their pensions. And by March, 5 weeks after the new president was inaugurated, 6 weeks after the Democrats came into majority in the Senate, and I became chair of the Senate Banking and Housing Committee, we delivered. We fixed the pension system for 100,000, mostly Teamsters and Bakers and iron workers and other tradespeople, other union members in Ohio. We did the child tax credit, which was a $3,000 tax cut to 90% of Ohio families with kids. We invested in public transit. We did a number of things that absolutely matter. And we got the vaccination program going to get the economy back in. So President Biden promised 1 million vaccines a day in this first 100 days. We ended up getting almost 200 million those first 100 days. So it shows that elections have consequence. You vote for a pro-worker, pro-labor group of candidates, and it begins to change the country. It's because President Biden and I and the Democratic majority are all about the dignity of work, that you govern through the eyes of workers.
Mm-hmm. You know, let's talk about that child tax credit for one. And that's huge. And I don't know if it got the play that it should have. And I also want to know about the future of that continuing, because what I'm reading, it's the largest tax cut for working families ever. Is that right?
Yeah, ever. Yeah, it's again, it's 92. It's something I've worked on for 8 years. My office, we wrote this bill. We've worked on it for years. It took a new president to pick it up and get it through the Senate. It's essentially starting July 15th, people began to literally more than 1 million Ohio families began to get $250 or $300 or more, depending on the number of children, checks in their mailboxes or direct deposited. So it's a minimum $3,000 tax cut, refund tax cut. For over 1 million Ohio families, it's about 2.2 million Ohio children were benefited from this, and you know, in 1 million families or so, and the biggest in history. And you know, and every Democrat voted. This is important to remember. Every Democrat voted for it. Every Republican voted against it. I mean, Republicans vote for tax cuts. You know from this show, and you've talked to people for years, and people listen to this understand it. When Republicans are in control, the tax cuts go to rich people. When Democrats are in control, tax breaks and focus goes on working families. And that's the way that it should be. That contrast is so clear. Now, the history, the future of this, we have 48 Democrats that want to continue it, and two Democrats not sure, frankly, and all 50 Republicans are against. So we're working to convince those last two Democrats and then the vice president will break the tie and we'll extend it. I want to make it permanent. It expires like right now if we don't. And if we don't extend it, and it's my top priority.
Now, Senator, is that part of the Build Back Better piece of legislation that we're trying to get through?
That is part of the Build Back Better, yes. Yeah, it's part of that whole plan. And as I said, we got 48 Democrats for it. Two Democrats, one in West Virginia, one in Arizona that aren't so sure. And we're working them every day. We talked to them again yesterday, and all 50 Republicans are no on it.
Oh, boy. Well, one thing is for sure, we got bipartisan agreement on the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. And my question to you, when are we going to start seeing the money? What's the process on that?
Well, we're going to start seeing it soon. Some of it is directly for public transit. Those investments are starting. And, you know, and that one of the things we all forget, we don't all, people on this show don't, but people forget about is how many good union workers there are at all these public transit systems, at RTA or at SORTA or any of the transit systems in Lorain County or Lake County, Lake Tran, whatever. And these are mostly union jobs. They're mechanics, they're bus drivers, they're essential workers. They've got generally good pay because they have good union representation. But these are essential workers whose lives were who were exposed to this virus and knew they went home every night, had to go home every night, anxious about infecting their family members. So we needed to do special funding there to protect them, to protect these union workers at transit. But the money's starting to go there. The money for the transportation projects will work with state, both county engineers and state governments to begin to invest those dollars. It's going to start happening soon. Again, it's elections matter. Everybody says they're for infrastructure investment. But the last president said he was for it, and then he turned around and took the $1.5 trillion and gave it away in tax cuts to rich people instead of investing in highways and bridges and water and sewer. And one of the things we're going to do in this, there are 600,000 pipes leading from the central water lines into people's homes, pipes that are contaminated with lead. And we know that affects children, particularly infants' brain development. And we're going to replace those pipes, and they're going to mostly be done by union workers that have the skills to do that.
Senator, one more question before we let you go. As you referenced, it was a year ago today we witnessed an attack on our Capitol. I'm just asking you right now, are you worried about the future? Are you worried about democracy in America today?
Well, I'm worried because a third of the country thinks that wasn't really an attack, or 40%. They think it was tourists, or it wasn't that big a deal, and Trump had nothing to do with it. Well, in fact, there's no question. I mean, I was there, and I didn't see violence directly. I mean, I wasn't in a room where they attacked, like some House members were, and a whole lot of staff and custodians. I had a resolution I introduced last night on the floor to honor the custodians that cleaned up afterwards and whose lives were threatened. They were locked in rooms. And I said on the floor that the insurrectionist destroyed and the mostly black and brown custodians cleaned up and the union building trades rebuilt. And that's essentially what's happened there. And I'm concerned because in every state legislature, including in Ohio, and our elections are clearly safe. There's no doubt about it. We're finding new ways to stop young people from voting, to stop low-income people from voting, to stop workers from voting, to stop people who have, you know, that can't get off work to vote. How are they? All of those stop African-Americans from, and they are engaging in longtime voter suppression that I thought was done in this country. So I'm very concerned about the future that way.
All right, Senator, we'll leave it on that note. Try to be as optimistic as we can. You take care, keep up the fight, and we'll talk to you next month, okay?
All right. Always, Flash. Thanks, buddy.
That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, Dorsey Hager, the Central Ohio Building Trades, and Fred Redman of the AFL-CIO. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.